You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Yo, yo, yo.
We have to talk a little bit about your profile pic on Facebook.
This is the topic of the week. Really, actually the topic of last week, but it's basically, it's hot stuff right now. Yeah, that's right.
According to my wife, Bobby, it's extremely annoying. Just so you know, she has decided that the people who do what you did are extremely annoying because it's this little motion that is always happening on your screen, you know, and she hates that. But I thought yours in particular was very well done with the turning to the camera. And the slow, sexy guy wink. I thought I was very amused by that. I found that to be quite entertaining. So what you did was you created a little video, because now Facebook will let you upload actually a small video for your profile pic, right?
Right, yes. Which a 7-second video with no audio you can use as your profile pic. So it will just loop a 7-second video. I think I mentioned on an episode a couple weeks ago, I was watching the season finale of Saturday Night Live, and I noticed that one of the bumper photos, you know, the very famous photos of the celebrity hosts that they use as when they return from a commercial break, they always show the celebrity's picture, and then they start the segment. Or if the band's about to play, there's usually a portrait of the artist or band that's about to play, and then they go into the show. So basically, those are the bumper photos from SNL. And I've always been an admirer of these. I think they're very cool. I think they've had a couple of different photographers over the years doing them. But just stylistically, I think they always come up with something really neat and interesting. And I noticed it was the Dwayne Johnson hosted the season finale.
Hang on, let me jump in real quick and say that before I forget, I'm pretty sure they've actually had the same woman doing it the entire run of the show.
Not the entire run, I don't think. I think it's been two. I'm trying to remember her name, Marion Masters, or I forget. I'll look it up,
okay.
I'll post.
Never mind.
There's a lot of at least her work. There's a lot. You can even watch behind the scenes of her working with people, and her process is really cool. Canon shooter too, by the way. Anyway, so I've always been an admirer of hers and of the work in general on the SNL portrait photography. But it comes back and it's a moving picture. It's Dwayne Johnson and he's moving. He's like, ta-da, like into the frame. And it just hit me like a lightning bolt in the brain. Facebook lets you do this. Instagram has video. And you can to create like a moving headshot for people's profile pictures. Because here's the thing. I've got like 200 comments when I changed my profile picture to this, because it's funny, gotten creepy also. I've gotten creepy, but I've gotten a ton of response from it. And I thought that as a marketing tool, if you were to create that for a client in a session, something that they could use as like a moving profile picture, that would be kind of a cool gimmick. If nothing else, if it's just a fad that goes away, then it's just something that in the short term is going to get a lot of attention for them on social media. And in the long term, if all profile pics are kind of going this way to like the Harry Potter kind of moving picture,
right.
This has been going on for a long time. If you watch a football game, whenever they bring up a particular player stats and stuff, that always pops their head up, and it went from a still photograph and now they're all moving. They're video. And so, you know, it's just something that I've been playing around with, but I've gotten a lot of mixed response, a lot of like, it's funny. I did one that's comedic, and I've had all kinds of cool ideas of what I could do for my next one, and I've made a couple for clients, and they seem to get a really good response, so I'm pretty stoked about it, and I'm just going to look forward to playing with it more. But Bobby's not the first person to hate on it. If you go on my Facebook profile picture and read the comment thread, there's some choice comments. I even got a text from Greg Daniel, friend of the show, who I know listens to every episode, who basically texted me and told me how creepy it was.
Well, does it only move on your computer, or does it do it on your phone too?
I think
on your phone, I think if you're just like scrolling through your feed, I don't think that they move.
It does, yeah. On your desktop, at least if you're looking in Chrome right now.
I know on your desktop it moves, because that's where I saw it, but I don't remember seeing it move on my phone. So I don't know if you're just scrolling through your feed on your phone and you know, does it? I was going to say they couldn't do that because it's too much bandwidth. But if you upload a video, it automatically starts playing on your phone.
Yeah,
so
they absolutely do automatically play on desktop and mobile. However, I was just looking up, just so Bobby doesn't have to look at me anymore, you can disable autoplay videos on the on your desktop.
And that's an autoplay video? That would fall under that criteria?
All by default on Facebook, all videos will start to play. The audio doesn't, but the video will, as long as it's in your screen, it'll play. If you scroll, you know, and you can turn that off. If you just Google, how do you turn off autoplay on Facebook? You can do that on your mobile devices and on your desktop version of it. You can stop videos from playing.
By the way, the SNL photographer is Mary Ellen Matthews, and she's been doing it since 1993.
Yeah, Mary Ellen Matthews. Yeah, she's. I think she's the second. And it's interesting, I think, that both of them have been – both of the past photographers have both been women, which I think was really cool.
Really?
And they're – yeah, Mary Ellen Matthews is excellent, and she's been innovating for a really long time quietly, and I don't know that she's been getting enough credit for her editorial portrait.
Well, it's a double-sided thing there. You say, well, how great. You get to photograph all of these celebrities. But the flip side of that coin is every week is a new celebrity, and you've got to come up with something – innovative or something to make them stand out, and you know, you've only got so. She's not like she's got a world of time. She gets them like during rehearsals and stuff. They pop down to her, and she gets them for just a little bit. And I've got to create some bumpers and stuff, and then you're done. So you know, she doesn't have a lot of time. I don't think it's an easy job by any stretch of the imagination.
She typically has to shoot the celebrity host or hosts when it's a double. And which it sometimes is, but she also has to do a photo shoot for the musical guest, which a lot of times is a band with 7 or 8 or 10 people in it. So, and she does a phenomenal job. Just go to Google, if you're listening and you want to check out her work, just Google Mary Ellen Matthews and do a Google image search, and you can just scroll down and see everybody she's photographed and all the different styles and things that she's done. You'll also see a lot of people trying to imitate Mary Ellen Matthews, but she's done a lot of really cool and creative stuff. She plays with color a lot. She's really great at creating interesting portraiture, different poses, different ideas, and I'm really a big fan of her in general. And so what I always have been keeping an eye on what she's doing, and it is in informs my work a little bit. And I think that she's a big fan. Kevin Newsom, friend of the show.
Kevin started doing senior portraits that way.
He started doing the Saturday Night Live treatment to senior portraits, and just saw one last week that was fantastic that he did that really captures the style really well.
So let me ask you real quick.
Really interesting work.
When you how did you shoot the video? Because if you're doing a portrait session, you're using flashes, so you use constant lighting, obviously, to shoot through your little video profile pic. How did you do that?
It's actually pretty cool because I got the 5D Mark IV, and it's really, really good at high ISOs. I got the photogenic lights in the studio, which I use. I've got 5 photogenic lights running in the studio. Before the video stuff, I actually just turn on the modeling lamps, because they're all hooked up to the Ion battery pack, so I don't typically have the modeling lamps on because it really kills the battery packs.
Right.
Because basically I got no cords on the floor in my studio, which is awesome. So all my lights are on wheels, and they're all on battery packs. And
that is cool.
Every couple of days I just plug the battery packs into my equipment room in the back, and I just plug all the battery packs in. When I come in, I just pop them back on the light stand. And so I have no cords. I'm a cordless on the floor studio, which is kind of neat. But if you use the modeling lamps, they have 6 different power settings, and you have to really turn the modeling lamps on, turn them on full power, and the batteries really drain quickly. But I shoot with just the modeling lamps on my photogenic lights. I'm not busting out any constant lights or anything. Although if you have a ring light or anything cool like that, you could do it. And then I just use the 5D Mark IV in video mode, probably usually shoot it like f2.8, 60 frames per second, because I like to edit them back in slow motion. And then recorded 120th of a second at like 2000 ISO. And the video looks fantastic. Like at 2000 ISO, that camera eats that for breakfast. And so even the video looks great at 2000 ISO. So I record a brief video clip. And here's the cool thing. You don't have to be a master video editor to do these things. What's cool is you can actually edit video in Photoshop, which I've been doing for a little while now. You can pull the video clip into Photoshop. It opens a whole timeline palette where you can do some really cool basic video editing functions and some non-basic. You can cut the clip to 7 seconds. You can even crop the video square in Photoshop, which is really cool. Select the section that you want, and you can right-click on it, and you can slow the clip down so that it will play back that 60 frames in slow motion. So there's a lot of really cool stuff you can do, and you can just use Photoshop, which you may already know how to use, to edit these video clips. It really doesn't add a lot to your workflow to do it. I create these moving headshots. It takes about an extra 5 minutes at the end of a session, and you kind of come up with a cool idea, and then it takes 5 minutes to edit in Photoshop. and then you export it as a video file and upload it to Facebook.
One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of now, that especially with my wife, because she's got her LuLaRoe business selling LuLaRoe clothes online, and I am just seeing more and more robust do-it-in-your-phone apps than ever before. I can't get her to use a camera. It drives me crazy. She's got to photograph. Right, she's got to photograph all these clothes, and so she can sell them. And she asked me to help her with her lighting. So I'm like, okay. So I set up some. I can put up a flash. I can put up no constant lighting. Okay, well I have some constant lighting, so I set that up for her. And I'm like, I can give you a camera. We can tether it. You can take the pictures. It'll automatically go to your computer. Then you can open them in Photoshop. Batch process them to the size that you want, have the labels and logos you want automatically applied and do all of that for you right there in Photoshop. And she's like, no, I do it all on my phone. Take the picture with my phone, put the logos on my phone, upload from my phone. It's just easier to do it all from my phone. And it drives me crazy because she'll come to me and she'll go, how do I do this or how do I do that? And I'm like, well, you start by not using your phone, by using an actual camera. That's how you start. Can we start with that, please? Can you maybe use an actual camera? You know, no. I want you to tell me how to do all this stuff I want to do, but in my phone. I'm like, okay, right. Well, you have to go download an app for your phone that allows you to set the manual settings because you're having a problem with your white balance, and you need to be able to set your custom white balance, and you need, you know, and she just won't. She's like, no, I want to be able to do it all on my phone, because she also wants to be able to do it while she's, you know, sitting at breakfast.
Absolutely. Yeah, but that's the way the world is.
Yeah.
They're coming up. There's apps for everything. In fact, I was just playing around with Cinemagraph Pro by Flixel, which is a really cool app to create cinemagraphs, which we've talked about on the show before.
Right.
And it's like a $200 a year license to use that
thing. I'm so sick of the licensing.
But you can record 4K video and edit it and do masking with your finger. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And if you use it for marketing, that's not a very big market expense for a whole year. And a lot of people market on Instagram and Facebook, cinemagraphs, moving photos, all this kind of stuff. You're not only getting a program that does it pretty amazingly, but you're also getting a program that you can use completely from your phone. And people will pay to be able to just do stuff on the go and to be able to do everything from your phone.
Well, listen, Snapseed is free. As an image editing program for your phone, Snapseed, which is made by Google, and they are always upgrading and adding new stuff. They just recently added, now, when you get a portrait, you can click the portrait button and then just slide your finger left and right, and they will just look a little to the left or a little to the right or a little up or a little down. It basically captures their face as a kind of as a liquify and can move it en masse. So if they're just not quite turned enough to the left or enough to the right, or you can just fix that, no problem. In your phone, Gary.
Yep.
And isn't Photoshop supposed to be coming out with some new make your headshot look great with your phone thing soon?
It's called Adobe Sensei. It's called Adobe Sensei.
Sensei. Wax on, wax off.
What's crazy about Sensei is that not only can it drop in a background, add filters and stuff, you can actually change the lens perspective from you could take a selfie with your camera, which is a wide angle lens, and you can make it look like it was shot with a 100mm lens. It'll change the lens perspective in your phone.
Your lens used to hate chamber music, and now it likes chamber music. It's changed its perspective.
Well, I've had somebody send me the article on Adobe Sensei and be like, oh, does this scare the pants off you? It's going to kill the headshot business? I'm like, no, this is just going to reinforce the people who already aren't paying for a professional headshot because, they don't pay me necessarily for lens perspective. They pay me for a lot more than just that.
That's the thing. I have always said to professional photographers, if you want to make a go of it nowadays, you need to learn how to pose anyone to make them look good, and you need to learn how to light them, because those are the two things that they've yet to figure out how to fake. You know, they've yet to figure out how to fake that with your camera stuff. A lot of other stuff they're faking, or at least they're, you know, the high ISO shooting and that sort of thing. But posing and lighting, those are the two things that you can bring to the table that the guy with the cell phone cannot bring to the table.
Yeah, no, and I think that it's the making people comfortable, getting a great expression. Coming up with a vision, an idea that matches their sort of brand and identity for their business is huge. And so all of those things can can fall under the facet of things that cannot be done by an app. Figure out what cannot be done by an app or a computer program and make those things your strong selling points. Give people a reason, you know, to identify with you and to hire you over somebody else.
Speaking of things that cannot be done with an app, this is a lovely segue.
Scratching that weird place on my back? Yeah, there is not an app for that.
No app for that. I read a little thing. I didn't read it. I saw the headline. I refused to read it. And it was a guy shoots Formula One with with 100-year-old camera.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that for a second, because I could not care less about what Formula One looks like when shot with a 100-year-old camera. I feel that there is this cult of people who care about stuff like that, and I'm just not one of them. Like what's interesting about, you know, like our friend Pete Rizak, and he loves to shoot with this, with the giant film camera. And yes. And I think that that's so cool that he's into it. But I would never be into it in a million years, you know? why is it cool to use this antiquated thing when we have a modern thing? You know, we have a modern thing, you know? It's like saying, you know, it was really cool. We went camping and we drank from a stream. Yeah, I don't need to drink from a stream. There's a reason we don't drink from streams anymore. I can just drink actual water that has been run through a filter. And there's a reason that I don't have to use a 100-year-old camera to shoot Formula One, because we have cameras that do a much better job. So, I mean, I don't get the whole. And then what do you get? You get a picture where you go, ooh, this is interesting. No, it's not. It's bad, is what it is. That's why we have modern equipment, is so that we got. That's why everything gets better with modern equipment. Yeah, I don't. Is it just nostalgia? People just have a nostalgia.
I absolutely couldn't disagree with you more on this one.
Like when people say, "I want to shoot my whole wedding with a Polaroid Instamatic Land camera." Why? Why do you want to do that?
Well, I think that there are many people who would support. First of all, it's not like. First of all, this guy is not. If you want to find this article, it's also, I think, Petapixel picked it up. In addition, that Bored Panda also has it. Just Google photographer shoots F1. And by the way, I'm a big Formula One racing fan. That's kind of my sport.
I know. That's why I brought it up. It was because I knew that you were a Formula One. You were the fan.
The first
they
thing
only
is
have
that
one.
This guy is not trying to get everybody to replace their modern digital cameras with a 100-year-old camera. He is not saying that this is the best way to do it. This guy goes out and he's like, hey, let's see what I can get. Let's see what this thing will do. Let's see if I can make something interesting. It's using a different tool and a different medium to look at something that we only look through the sharpest, crispiest, most colorful, most poppy, everything in HD now. And he takes this old, old camera and figures out not to just capture images. He's trying to create, in my opinion, really cool artistic pieces based on what this camera is capable of. And I'm looking at the images, and I think that they are absolutely awesome. There's some great portraits in here. There's some great motion images. And it's not necessarily meant to be a replacement of anything, but I really love the idea of looking at the present day through the sort of, for lack of a better word, the lens of the past. Like, I just think that it's a really cool experiment. I think that it's a really cool project. And the images are really neat. I don't think that they're, some of them I'm looking at and I'm like, what's so special about that is basically the effect of the old camera is what makes the image interesting, not the image itself. But some of it, the capture is really, really neat. Just the quality of it, the you know, there's a whole lot to it that I think is really, really cool. And it's an interesting way to say, how would this, it almost gives us a view on the past, or at least the view of what we're doing now through that, through those eyes. And I think it's really, really cool.
It's a Formula One race car in the picture. There's nothing in the past about a Formula One race car.
Formula One racing has been around for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, but not that car. Let me rephrase that. If you were to take an old 100-year camera and take a picture of something that's 100 years old, for example, I have an old camera and I was trying to get film into it because I wanted to use it to take pictures at my grandmother's 90th birthday. Because I thought taking a picture of someone who's 90 years old with a camera that came out when she was 10 years old would be, that might be an interesting thing to do. So I get that. But like, I don't know, there's some guy in New York that's been around forever, and he uses some giant Polaroid back camera that takes the big, like 5x7 Polaroids or whatever. He just goes around taking pictures of people. And it's a thing, you know, he takes your picture and then he gives it to you and people go, ooh, look at this. And when you look at it, you just go, yeah, that's crap. There's a reason we don't use that anymore. There's a reason we that this was at the time the best we could do. But as soon as we came up with something better, we got rid of this. And I can make a take a picture with my camera today and hit it with a couple of actions and make it look just like that if that's the look I'm looking for. But you know, it'd be different. I guess if there was something about that process that produced something in the image that could not be produced any other way, then I guess I would understand it more. And I think probably if Pete Rizak was on the show, he would tell us that there is something about what he does with his film images that he simply cannot do with digital. And that I completely respect and understand. But I think a lot of times when I look at this stuff, I just think, well, it just looks like a picture that you need a better camera.
You know what this guy should do, according to you? He should just go kill himself.
Yeah, he should kill himself. I feel strongly about that most people who don't agree with me should just kill themselves.
Now, I think I really like the project because I like Formula One, and obviously it very rarely does Formula One and photography intersect in a meaningful way for me. I just think, and there's a great picture of him holding this old beast with all these people with modern cameras like in the media pit. And I think it's cool. I think the images are kind of compelling. I think it's interesting. And here's the thing. It's like, it's not like you got to hang these up in your house. You know what I mean? It's like the guy wanted to do it. He did it, and it turned out pretty cool. There's a great portrait of Daniel Ricciardo, who's one of the drivers for Red Bull Racing. It's a really kind of cool split light portrait of him. And I don't know. I think it's kind of cool.
Let me be clear that I'm not saying – I haven't even seen the pictures. I'm not saying that the work isn't great, or I'm not saying that it can't be interesting, I guess. I'm not at all – and I'm not arguing that anyone who thinks it is wrong any more than I can argue that if you like broccoli, there's something wrong with you. You know, I'm not making that. I'm going to make it perfectly clear. I'm just saying that me personally, I'm like a guy who doesn't like broccoli, and there's nothing you're going to say to me that's going to convince me that I should like broccoli. And that's what I'm just saying is that when I see these projects where it's, you know, well, we thought it would be cool to go shoot, you know, to go shoot with a Polaroid land camera. And I think, well, I got a Canon 40D in there. Why don't I go shoot with my Canon 40D? Because it'll be cool. No, because I shot my Canon 40D 12 years ago, and now I'm two cameras beyond that, and I bought better cameras for a reason. Why don't I go back to the crappy camera?
I think that's the thing. I don't think they're crappy. I think you're talking apples and oranges. I think that the cool thing about these old film cameras is they're generally so simple of a device. A device that was invented couple of thousand years ago, you know, that they figured out that they could do this in like China, like 2,000 years ago. They're like, hey, yeah, this is how this works. Like, if the device is essentially the same, and I think that's the point, is that it's a medium that's exposed to light inside a box with a little pinhole in it. And I think that the cool part is that these things still take great pictures. Part of this was, though, you would probably never photograph a sporting event of vehicles moving at 220 miles an hour with a camera that's not really meant for it. It'd be like taking a Hasselblad out to one of these things. Even the modern digital Hasselblads, it's like, I think I remember a few years ago, they didn't even make a Hasselblad that would go to ISO 400. Because it's like, why would you be using it in this situation? You know, and I think that there's a lot that I like about this. I think that is pretty cool. But you think it's gimmicky, and you would just like to have seen him take out the same rig that everybody else had.
I don't think it's necessarily gimmicky. I just don't. I don't get into the whole idea of I'm going to take a picture using a really old camera. And then people go, ooh, look at that. And when I look at it, I go, ooh, that's what an old camera, which is crappy compared to what we have today, that's what that picture looks like. But, you know, there's a reason we don't use those cameras anymore. And it's because the pictures aren't as good as the ones we can take today. But if your whole idea is, I like this look, for instance, Lomo, right? The Lomo look came about because it was a Russian camera, the Lomo camera, and they leaked. They leaked light. And as a result, all the pictures taken with this camera had a specific look to them where the color was saturated differently and they had this look of Lomo. Yeah, I have an action in Photoshop and I can just hit that button and make any picture I take look like that. I don't need to actually go get a Lomo camera and take from 1942 and take pictures with film to get that look anymore. I guess what I'm saying is that those looks and the look of an old camera, etc., are all – we still have them. We still have access to them without having to use those tools anymore. In the same way that if you decide you're going to use handheld tools to shave down the beams in your house, Okay, I don't necessarily think that's cool because there's a reason we have an electric lathe.
But they're artisanal beams. They're artisanal beams.
That's my point exactly, is artisanal beams.
No, you know what?
Just because it's made by hand doesn't mean it's better. If I use a machine, you know, you go to a modern woodworker's workshop now, he does nothing by hand and he produces far more higher quality,
Do you know what? I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head inadvertently, is that I think that the world is sped up so much and everything's so instantaneous. I think there's a certain element in society, in culture, that values things that are done slowly, are done kind of the old-fashioned way, you know, like the people who are kind of obsessed with Amish furniture, you know, like stuff like that. I think that there's something fascinating and something that resonates with people about something that way. And I think that that's why stuff like this is popular. I think that's why, you know, you have a resurgence in people shooting on film. I think that's why you have all kinds of things.
I'm trying to think if there's anything in my life, and is there anything in your life that you can think of that there is a more convenient or modern way to do it, but you insist on doing it the old way just because you're like I won't use a food processor. You know, I'm going to chop my vegetables by hand. Or is there anything you can think of off the top that someone might be like, why don't you have an automatic? Well, because I'm going to drive a stick because that's what a car is supposed to be. Or is there anything you can think of in your life that you're kind of a...
Oh, gosh, I know loads of people that won't buy an automatic car.
Yeah, but I mean, you personally, is there anything personally in your life that you're like, you know, no, I do it this way because you're not... Because that's why I find it so interesting that you're taking the other side of this, because you, I know, are like me, where you're like, give me the easiest way to get this thing done and let me have a beer. You know, yeah. I love the modern device. I want to push a button and have this done. You know,
I think that it depends person to person. Will probably feel differently. Some people would they love the idea of handcrafted, slow food made from scratch. Some people like, you know, furniture. Some people will like paintings. You know, for example, okay, you could paint anything, make anything you want in Photoshop and print it on canvas or in Corel Painter or something like that. But there is something to be said about the craftsmanship of somebody making a painting or a sculpture by hand.
I mean, painting is full on paint on the canvas.
Same thing. What about a sculpture? You could get a 3D printer and a laser machine to make a sculpture.
No, not the same
thing. But somebody creating a sculpture by hand with a little hammer and chisel?
Not the same thing.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing.
How is it different? Tell me how it's different.
It's not the same thing because a painting...
How is it different?
Because a paining takes a level of artistry, whereas taking a picture with a Lomo camera doesn't take a level of artistry. It's just it's the medium itself, or the device itself, is inferior to what we have today, and so it produces an inferior looking product.
Right,
that inferior product is now romanticized. It's the same thing with taking pictures with a Polaroid Land camera. I think that the only reason people like the way it looks is because it reminds them of when they were kids and their parents used those cameras. I think that these sort of things are more about nostalgia than they are about true artistic merit of the finished product.
Sure, that's possible, but I wouldn't mind if a nice Amish man would come build me a proper closet system instead of IKEA. Like, I think I'd be okay with
that. I mean, I love the stuff that Pete Rizak does, but I don't know that his clients care that he uses a big film camera to produce
the picture
that he...
I totally disagree. I think that they may not understand exactly every in and out of it, but if you look, a lot of photographers that are in the boutique business model are doing a lot of things in a very old school way, because I think that people do identify with that. People do like to see that. It does set them apart, and there is value in it. And whatever
don't
you
get
attribute
me,
that...
Don't get me wrong. You can sell it. You can absolutely be part of your narrative. I mean, if you talk to Greg Daniels about the prints that he does, Greg won't tell you, well, yeah, we do them on canvas and we frame them. Greg will tell you, well, actually, it's a 16-step process. It starts with a laminate that's made in Tibet by small monks, and then we have to smear that. You know,
only tiny monks.
Exactly.
If you're taller than 5 feet
tall,
you're
very small. They're very small. You have to have small fingers to make the laminate. And they, he will tell you there's a whole process to making this, which absolutely adds to a, if not a real value, certainly a perceived value, and probably a real value as well, that you, when you express this to your clients, you know, the more work the clients feel you put into your work, the more valuable it is. Certainly. So there's something, there is something to that. But I think we got to remember this because Pete's going to be there when we do the show live at Focus in a couple of months. And we're going to have to ask Pete about this, about, you know, does he think that if he took his pictures, could he make them look the same with a modern camera, for starters? And if he can, how valuable is the how much of him using a film camera is about the fact that he just loves using the film camera? That's my question.
Probably half. I don't
know. Yeah. How much of it is that I love doing it this way?
Isn't that the thing about being in business, though? You're actually creating the value, creating a narrative, like you said.
Yeah, and it's very much a narrative. You know, this is
like that's.
You know, we only sell handcrafted frames as opposed to mass produced frames. Well, handcrafted frames naturally are going to be more expensive.
Right. Right. Because they take more time. Are they better?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
But people like that. People like handcrafted. They like artisanal. They like things done old school. Like I was just in Italy. People spend, as a world, we spend a couple billion dollars a year just going to Italy to eat handmade pasta.
It's made by hand. And I'm like, well, you know, hands made the machine that made the thing I ate, and mine tastes good too. I don't have a problem with that.
I made this peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Whole made by hand thing. I have that going on with my canvases.
Handcrafted.
My canvases, I use a canvas company that doesn't use wood for their canvases, but it uses rather a very, very sturdy, like sturdy cardboard type. Okay. So my canvases are not as heavy as wood stretched canvas, which I actually like because you can hang them on the wall with those 3M sticky Velcro things. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to put nails in the wall, and it's much easier.
Great.
Yeah, you can just put those on the back and just go stick and stick it right where you want it. So you don't have that whole measuring thing, and they're lighter, and this is important, they're quite a bit cheaper. So you can buy canvas for I can provide canvas to my clients for my homes, at a lower price with the idea of put this on your wall and then when your kids outgrow it, you can throw it away and you won't feel bad and you can get another one. Whereas opposed to if you're getting the wood stretch canvas, it's very expensive, it's much more artistic and it's meant to be up there for 20 years, which makes it hard for me to sell you another one in 5 or 10 years. And it's just a different business model. But I've had this discussion with other people who are like, no, because I don't think the quality is as good. And I'm like, I understand that, but in my case, I don't want the quality to be as good. I want it to be more disposable. I want it to be cheaper. You know, like my father who would never buy an expensive watch. Why would I buy an expensive watch when I can buy a Timex for $18 and replace it every year?
Didn't your father leave you an Omega Speedmaster?
No, I bought that Omega Speedmaster myself, which, by the way, it's stopped running, and it's going to cost me a minimum of $500 to repair it. And I refuse to spend $500 to repair that watch. And so I think I'm just going to get another one.
Just throw it down in the hole after the guy with the F1 camera. You can just throw it down.
I just find the whole thing interesting.
I'll take it. I'll give you $500 for it.
For my Omega Speedmaster?
Yeah.
That doesn't run? You understand?
Hey, how much is it worth?
Yeah, that's right. See, this is the Speedmaster Professional, not the Speedmaster. I mean, this is Speedmaster Automatic, not the Speedmaster Professional. I want the Speedmaster Professional, which is worth like $3,000 to $5,000. Mine's the Speedmaster Automatic, which was made for the Asian market, so it's actually smaller, and it probably was, I don't know, $1,300, $1,500, something like that. So paying $500 to repair a $1,300 watch, I'm not so sure. I want to spend $500. You know, that seems a bit much, right?
I think it depends on what it means to you, my friend.
It doesn't mean anything to me. If it was if it was passed down from my father, then that would be different. But it was
then go and get it, and I want you to take a hammer and I want you to smash it on the right now. Put it on the table in front of you and smash it.
No, more than likely, what I'll do is I'll try and sell it to somebody who wants to buy it and repair it.
You sure you don't want to just smash it?
I'm
are you too attached to it? Too much nostalgia?
No, I think I can get some sort of money out of it.
Oh, okay. All right.
But I'm sure that at some point during this rant, I have offended both Pete Rizak and Gregory Daniels, and I want to make it clear.
And everyone who likes film. And Formula One.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm a big believer in saying it's okay to like something simply because you like it. You don't have to justify it. You don't have to say, right. I like this, and the reason it's okay that I like it is because it's better quality, or because it can just be, you know what, I like this, and therefore this is what I use, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And you certainly don't have to get all butthurt when Blu-ray hates on it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, it's okay. It's okay, you know, maybe you really feel that the heritage of the Civil War is important, or maybe you just really like putting on that uniform and hanging out in the field for a weekend with a bunch of guys carrying guns from 1862. And that's okay either way. You don't have to, there doesn't have to be a reason why you're a Civil War reenactor. It can just be that you like it. And it can be that you use a big film camera just because you like it. It makes you feel good. It makes you nostalgic.
You don't have to have a reason for wearing women's underwear.
No,
it can strictly be because
just,
you enjoy it.
You can just like it.
You don't
it.
Have to say that it's more comfortable or that it's lighter, that it's more airy. It could just literally be that I just feel like wearing women's underwear.
A fine low-rise mesh, while more comfortable, does not have to be justified. You can wear it simply because you, hey, it's about me. And you think
because there's less material that it wouldn't be as supportive, but actually it's quite the opposite. It's even more. Hypothetically speaking.
I think this is something that comes with age a lot of times. Yeah, because I remember thinking when I was younger.
Underwear?
Well, no, that's been since college, to be honest. But I think that that as you get older, a lot of times, and I wish I was this way my whole life, I'll want to do something or I won't want to do something. And someone will say, you know, well, that's not a good enough reason. You got to give me a better reason. And I'll say, no, I don't. I don't have to give you a reason at all. I can simply say, I don't want to do that. And that's all the reason I need. I don't have to justify it to you. You know, you have the friends who are like, why won't, come on, you got to do a shot with us. No, I don't. I don't have to do a shot.
People are shocked by that kind of just honesty. Like, for example, like if somebody invites you to come do something and they text you, be like, hey, look, we're going to go do this. And I feel like when you say no, you have to give them a reason why. And instead you could just say, no, I don't really want to go to Olive Garden for dinner.
Yeah.
I'll catch you on the next one. Instead of going, we'd have to get a sitter, and Ellie's kind of had a runny nose. And no, you just go, no, I don't want to do that.
They take it personally. You just check that, you know, I'm not a big fan of Olive Garden, so you guys go ahead.
Yeah.
They're like, that guy's a snob.
I only like artisanal pasta.
Yeah, absolutely. I do not like the endless breadsticks. But
I do not like four freaking tons of pasta for $9.99.
What was it? Norm McDonald's recent comedy stand-up special. He said, you know, when you're sitting at home and you sit around, I'm going to start talking like Norm McDonald. He goes, you decide you're gonna make yourself some dinner. You know, so you go over there and you know I'm gonna make myself up some pasta. You have a pasta there and some sauce and everything, and then you think to yourself, you know, while this is cooking, I think I'll just eat a loaf of bread. Because you don't do that, right? You don't do that at home, but you do it in a restaurant. In a restaurant, where's my bread? Can you bring me a loaf of bread, please, while I'm waiting for dinner?
Julie's Uncle Tony, when we were up in New Jersey recently, and her family is Italian, and not in the like, we have Italian heritage. They're like everything you think a bunch of Italians from New Jersey would be like, in the best possible way. And he was talking about getting into it with like a restaurant. He's like, that charges for bringing you more bread. And he's sitting there and he's waiting for more bread. And he goes, waitress, can you bring me some more bread? And she goes, oh, well, you know, there's a charge for that. Do you mind paying? He's like, I'm Italian. He goes, I got my fork in one hand and my bread in the other. Just bring me some more damn bread.
That's right. What's funny is I always forget that Julie's Italian. And her last name is Fioretti, for the love of God.
Yeah, it's not, she's not Italian. She's Italian.
She's Italian. Yeah, well, that's okay. I forget that you're born in England all the time. I forget it on a weekly basis.
Filthy immigrant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Filthy immigrant. Oh, so we had a listener question emailed in that we can get to because I got a real quick and easy answer.
Okay. Yes, we did have a listener who wrote us with a question. It was Matt, I hope I get this right, Giambra? G-I-A-M-B-R-A? Giambra. Giambra? Is that Italian?
Giambra? I don't sound. If it ends in a vowel, chances are pretty solid it's Italian.
He's from Wyoming, Pennsylvania. And he said, I was curious if you guys can go into what goes into your business plan on one of your upcoming shows. I'm starting out my first business ever. I keep hearing about the importance of having a business plan, but I don't really know where to start. And Gary has a perfect answer for this.
Yeah, actually, when I have taught business in some of the classes I've taught before, I always tell people to work backwards. Like, initially, people want to go, what do I price? What's my pricing set at? And how do I charge? And so you have to think of it in terms of like you're going to build a price list and then just try and sell as much as you can. And I never found that to be productive. I think if you start at the end and work your way down to the smaller numbers, it's always better. So say, for example, then ask yourself the number one question is, how much money do I want to make? And start with that number. How much money do you want to make? You want to make $150,000 with your business? Then you start with that number, because then you have something that you can actually physically start to iron out. How many sessions? What's your sales average? What type of business model? So start with how much money do you want to make and what type of business model you're going to have. And there's a really cool, I just remembered that on the PPA website, they have a really cool business planning tool called Square One. I remember reading about this in the magazine like a year ago. And so I just pulled it up. And if you go to PPA.com and just type in the search bar Square One, you find Try Square One. It's under benefits, PPA benefits, Try Square One. And it's got a little video that shows you how to do with it. And it's actually exactly what I was thinking. It says begin with the end in mind, and there's a start button. And right here on the page, you put in what do you want your net income to be? How much money do you want to make after all your expenses come out for your business? What type of photography do you want to offer in your business? Would you prefer to, and then it wants to know what, do you want to enter your session goal or sales average goal? So how many sessions or how much per session? And are you a home-based or a retail business? So you plug that information in, and then I'm going to plug that in right now. I'm going to put, let's say I want to make $100,000 net, and I'm going to say that I am a general portraits and wedding photographer, and I want to put in by
shooting. Shooting, by the way, with like an Ansel Adams camera, with the big thing. It goes that thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's got to have the bulb that literally explodes.
Yes, you
have
to not the bulb. No. I want to go all the way back to the flash powder.
Oh, like the flash powder. Yeah. Oh God.
I want to go all the way back to the flash powder.
There's a funny,
because I think that would be a unique look. You know, I think it would be a unique look. I think if you photographed the Muppets with that camera, that you would get a unique look if you photographed the Muppets with that camera.
Okay.
That's going to be my project.
Good. I think you should totally do that, and then I'll make fun of it when it gets on Petapixel. Okay, so then it says, would you prefer to enter your session goal or your sales average goal? So this is a really pivotal question for a photography business. It's like, do you want to say how much money do you want to make per sale, or how many sessions do you want to shoot a year? And so I really like to think of it in terms of how much do I want to work? And this comes down to what type of business do you want to have? Do you want to have a more boutique business, or do you want to have a higher volume business? And so I'm going to put in like number of sessions that I want to shoot. And then it's going to tell you how much you need to make per session. And let's say I'm on a home-based business. Click next. Boom. So the number of weddings I want to shoot in a year, I don't want to shoot that many. I'll say 20 weddings. And let's say in a general portrait session, I want to shoot 75 portrait sessions. And then you click next. Okay. So it says that I need to shoot 20 weddings with a $5,500 average and 75 portraits with a $1,500 average. And you can actually have the ability to go in and adjust those numbers, and they'll compensate for each other. And it lays out a really basic business plan with a cost of sales and general expenses to get you to that original number that you said you wanted to make. It's a really good place to start, actually, why it's called Square One. So I thought that was a really cool tool, really easy thing that you can do to sort of get an idea of where you should start. In addition to that, to form a business plan, I think that the first thing that you have to do is address what need you want to meet. Like, what is your market the right place to do it, and what need are you addressing that needs to be addressed?
Let me just say this.
Yeah.
Anyone listening to the podcast today who has taken offense at anything that I've said.
I love that you're on a totally different planet right now.
I'm not. I want to point out that before you take me too seriously, that until just now, I didn't get why it was called Square One. So, if you for consolation, that's how stupid I am. Until you just now said that, I didn't get. Oh, I actually thought, why do they call it Square One? And now, because that's where you start, is with this plan.
Yeah, it's literally just, and it'll export the whole document as a CSV file, which you can open up in Word and everything. But I'm glad that I said that because I figured, what if somebody out there doesn't understand why this is called Square One? Surely Bu-Ray gets it.
You would think that a normal person with average intelligence would figure out Square One. You're starting with Square One. That's exactly what it is. But, of course, I do not have an average intelligence, but am, in fact, far below par. I should be using a Kodak Land Instamatic camera, a Polaroid Instamatic camera to take my pictures. Yeah, I don't get that. I just don't get it. Like, oh, we need to keep making film for that camera, Gary, so people can still take those crappy little square Polaroid Instamatic. Why? You can just take it with a good camera and then use a $100 printer. I have one sitting on my desk that you can Wi-Fi it directly to that printer and print out a really nice 4x6. Why do you need a Polaroid Instamatic land where you shake it like a Polaroid picture?
You're not supposed to shake them, though. That's common misconception.
But everybody thinks that you do.
You could actually separate the layers and ruin the photo by shaking them. I just want to point out that it's probably not a good idea. You just really need to let it dry and be exposed to light, a normal amount of light, and you'll be fine. Shaking it could ruin
it. But we want to shake it.
But, well, you know, if you shake it too much, you could just do some real damage.
We want to shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Gary. Well, don't shake it too hard or too often or too much.
What song is that? By the way,
just a little shake. Just that's "Hey Ya" by
Hey
Outkast.
Ya. There you go. Shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. I think we're done now.
All right.
Hey, thanks for writing in,
Square One,
Matt.
But Square One is great.
Check out the Square One on PBA's website. In addition to that, make sure you have a good accountant. And honestly, this is a really cool thing that I've actually done. You can audit. Classes at local community colleges very often have entrepreneurship classes and business basics classes, and you don't have to be degree seeking. You can literally just pay and go and audit a class for a semester that'll teach you and let you do mock business models and do all that kind of stuff. If you've got a community college in your area, check out their course list, and you can almost certainly find a really great class you could go in with an experienced instructor who can help you formulate your business plan over the course of a few weeks. It'd be a really cool idea.
Yeah,
but it's also probably on YouTube. If you don't want to do it the old-fashioned way, you want to do it the boo-boo way, just go ahead and look it up on YouTube and laser it into your brain.
Wouldn't it just be easier to listen to our podcast and get everything you need to know about everything?
I think that the problem is...
I mean, really, seriously, go to a community college and audit a course? What the hell are you, Einstein? I'm not going to audit a course at a community college.
I've done it, man. I've done it.
You, with your contact a lawyer and go to community college. No, I'm not doing any of that.
You know, you want to spend $150 on a class at a community college for a few weeks and make sure you really understand the ins and outs of formulating a business plan and learn managerial accounting. I mean, it's pretty
you're
simple.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right about that. I had a friend who had a business and they were starting up a business, and I said, what's your weekly nut? What do you mean? How much do you have to make every week to cover your expenses? Oh, I don't know. And in my head, I said, you're doomed. You're not going to make it. I was like, oh, okay, but inside my head, I was thinking, you're not going to make it. You don't even know what your expenses are. No.
It's according to this Square One that I just put in, the fictitious. I want to make $100,000 a year. I want to shoot 30 weddings and 75 portrait sessions, and that means your total sales goal, your total sales has to be. $375,000.
Does it use a basic formula based on surveys to determine what your probable costs are going to be, or does it let you put that in?
Right. Yeah, you can adjust your cost of sales. Like if you can get a lower cost of sales, let's say if you can get your cost of sale down to 20% and your general expenses down to 20%, then you can obviously make more money. So, there are a lot of different ways to do this and to push your numbers around. But this is a really good tool. And you can literally change all the numbers in the app up and down to sort of say, well, what if I change the average sale to $1,000 and the average wedding sale to $1,000? And it gives you exactly the amount of money that you're going to make, you could make. You're more than what net income you want. And you can up it, lower it. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal tool. Like here, if you want to make $117,000 a year as a photographer, you can shoot 30 weddings with a $4,000 average, which is very doable, and 75 portrait sessions with a $1,000 average, which is very doable. And you could bring home $100,000 as your income, your net $117,000 as your income. You want to lower that to $3,500. Let's say if you do, here's what happens. If you do 30 weddings for at a $3,000 average and 75 portraits at a $1,000 average, and you keep your cost of sales and general expenses a little low, you're going to make $100,000 in a year.
Okay.
And that's achievable. That's achievable numbers. That's what's the crazy thing about it. Once you see it written out, you're like, I could totally do that.
Right.
That's not bad at all. I dig it. So good luck with that business plan. And don't forget community college, film cameras, and Bure hates everything.
I don't hate it. I just I understand it to a certain extent, but I don't feel you have to sell me on it. It's okay that you like doing that, and I think this is cool that you like doing that, but you don't have to, you don't feel like you have to explain yourself. Just be like, hey, I like doing this, and that's enough. Because I'm important.
That's good.
And if you like doing it, then great. More power to you.
You do you, boo-boo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Coming up September 9th through the 11th, we will be at the Focus Convention. Go to runfocus.com. This is a fantastic, fantastic convention. Our good friend Pete Rizak will be there teaching how he uses a big film camera to take these incredible portraits that he sells for buku bucks to his clients, and you should come and watch his class. I am going to be watching his class and enjoying it greatly because the work is fantastic, as well as many other great speakers that we're going to have that
Lindsay weekend. Adler, Jared Platt. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Also coming up September 29th and October through October 2nd, I'll be at the Expose 2017 conference, Jekyll Island Conference Center. Go to gppa.com. That's in Georgia. Imaging USA coming up January 14th of next year, and you've got some stuff coming up.
I do. June 13th, I'll be in San Diego doing a headshot intensive. And June 19th, I'll be in Austin, Texas, teaching the business of headshots. And way, way far in the future beyond Focus, I will be in January. I'll be teaching at the Society Wedding and Portrait Photographers Convention in London, England. It's going to be really cool. So that's going to be January 10th through the 14th. Is that whole convention, and that's swpp.co.uk. And you'll be able to find all this information, listen to all our previous episodes, subscribe to the podcast no matter what format, and read a cute, adorable little bio with pictures of both Bure and myself at photobombpodcast.com.
All right. You can find us online at photobombpodcast.com. You can find us at facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find me at Bure Perry Photography. I'm sorry, bureperry.com. And you can find Gary at hueysfioretti.com. And you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We will see you back here next week.
All right. See you later.